Well, individualism is a very important value to Unitarian Universalists. We come out of a British cultural tradition that places a high value on the individual. This is something we share with other denominations that come out of the British culture, such as the Congregationalists, the Episcopalians, and the Methodists. In this church, our heroes are people like Henry David Thoreau, who wrote, "If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away." And for 2 years, Thoreau lived the life of splendid individualism in a cabin near Walden Pond. This morning, however, I want to suggest that we can overdo this celebration of individuality. Sometimes groups are smarter than individuals. As an experiment, a sociologist asked the students in a classroom to estimate the room's temperature and to write down their estimate without talking to anyone else in the class. The average of the group guests was 72.4 degrees. The actual temperature was 72 degrees. Another sociologist asked 200 students to rank a collection of items by weight. The group's answer was 94% accurate, which was better than all but five of the individual guesses. In still another experiment, a professor asked students to rank 10 piles of buckshot by size. The group's guess was 94.5% accurate. The internet search engine, Google, originally decided which web pages to display by counting each link to a web page as a vote. Google assessed a web page's importance by the votes it receives. So when I type a word into Google, it decides in less than a second of the billions of web pages which page with the word I am searching for has received the most votes. That page goes first on the list that they display. Using this method, Google became the most popular internet search engine. Now, these examples all come from a book called The Wisdom of Crowds. The author argued that under the right circumstances, groups are remarkably intelligent, and the community as a whole is often smarter than the smartest individuals within the community. For example, he described the search for the submarine Scorpion. In 1968, a terrible tragedy, the American submarine Scorpion disappeared on its way back to Newport News, Virginia. Although the Navy knew the sub's last reported location, it had no idea what had happened to the sub after that. The area where the Navy began searching was a circle 20 miles wide and many thousands of feet deep. Now, to focus the search better, a naval officer assembled a team, including mathematicians, submarine specialists, and salvage experts. The officer asked each person to give his or her best guess about the location of the Scorpion, to do so independently without a conversation with others. The naval officer took all of the guesses, put them on a map, and looked at where they intersected, thus creating the group's collective estimate of the location of the submarine. No individual member of the group had picked the spot that was the consensus spot. Nevertheless, divers found the submarine 220 yards from the intersection of all the individual guesses. Now, this evidence suggests that diversity and independent groups are intelligent. The key words here are diverse and independent. Diverse means a wise group is made up of people with different backgrounds, different specialties. And independent means that the members of the group are all thinking for themselves. They are people who trust their own ideas and experiences, their own feelings. Of course, communities are not always diverse, and they are not always independent in their thinking. In January of 2010, I was serving as the senior minister of a Unitarian Universalist church in Bethesda, Maryland. We invited the neighbors who lived around the church to come and talk with us. It was a difficult evening. An angry mob of neighbors verbally attacked the leadership of my church for 2 hours. That night, the phrase, "the thin veneer of civilization," came to my mind. Although all the attacks came as words, I found myself imagining this mob of neighbors chasing me out of my church and setting fire to the building. They were enraged. Well, why? What was the issue? A few weeks before, I had received a phone call from a representative of a cell phone company. He said that they were willing to pay the church $18,000 a year rent if, in exchange, we would allow them to put on our property a cell phone tower designed to look like a tree. I did a little investigation and suggested to our board that we could make a counteroffer asking $25,000 a year to rent the space for a cell phone tower. Now, this wasn't a secret board meeting, and a member of my congregation heard about this, and she decided to go door to door in the neighborhood passing out a leaflet. It said that the church was going to construct a cell phone tower that would lower property values and cause cancer. Her claim was not based in science. An international commission of independent scientific experts says there is no scientific evidence that exists of any adverse health effects from cell phone towers when they are regulated properly. And the American Cancer Society also says that cell phone antennae are very unlikely to cause any serious health problems. In my own research, I had found that many churches, religious schools, and hospitals have cell phone towers. Near my Bethesda church, I discovered, for example, that the Baptist Home for Children has a 150-foot cell phone tower on their property, disguised as a tree, a 150-foot tree, the biggest tree in the neighborhood. And I looked at the board of directors of the Baptist Home for Children, and I found it ironic that one of the community organizers who was trying to stop our cell phone tower was actually a member of the board of the Baptist Home for Children. I also found it ironic that, given the claim of health problems, this is a church that's located within a mile of the National Institute of Health and what was then the Bethesda Naval Hospital and is now the new Walter Reed Hospital. We're within a mile of these two hospitals, and I found that there were cell phone towers on top of both the National Institute of Health Hospital and on top of the Bethesda Naval Hospital. It seemed unlikely to me that doctors and scientists from these major hospitals would allow towers on these buildings if the towers caused illness. I found that altogether there were 59 cell phone towers within 4 miles of my church. Each of these towers had many antennas, for a total of more than 700 antennas within 4 miles of the Bethesda Church. Our tower, disguised as a tree, would have added 2 antennas to these 700. So that evening, we invited the neighbors to come, and we had a presentation from 2 health experts in the congregation. One had a PhD in public health from Harvard, and one had a PhD in public health from Johns Hopkins. They each said that there was no health danger. Next, we then invited the neighbors to comment, to speak. The 300 people in the room said that they were outraged that a church would even consider allowing a cell phone tower on its property. Many of these neighbors, while they were talking, had their own cell phones with them as they condemned us. I remember one young woman told us that if we built the tower, she would be afraid to go outside of her home. She would be afraid to have friends over. She said she would be afraid to even open her bedroom window. And while she said all this, she was holding her own cell phone in her hand. And I wanted to ask her if she had any idea how her phone worked. That in order for it to work, there had to be a cell phone tower within reasonable distance. But the group was pretty angry at us at this point, so I stayed quiet. After the meeting, the church board had a quick conversation and voted to drop the whole idea. The additional income, $18,000 or $25,000, was just not worth the trouble. Still, we learned from everything. And that night, I learned that crowds are not always wise. Groups can, in fact, be completely irrational. And I remembered Reinhold Niebuhr's 1932 book, Moral Man and Immoral Society. The thesis of the book is that people are more likely to sin as members of communities than they are as individuals. In the years after Reinhold Niebuhr published his book in 1932, the rise of Nazi Germany seemed to confirm the view that we humans are more likely to sin when we are part of a group. But I don't think this is always the case. Groups can be wise. Groups can be moral. And this happens when communities are made up of people with different, diverse backgrounds, different experiences, different knowledge and specialties. Communities are also wise when the individual members of the community are able to think for themselves, feel empowered that when they think about things with their own minds and make their own decisions, that they'll be respected and trusted for their own ideas and experiences. Neither of these conditions was present that January night when we talked about phone towers. The mob had formed an opinion, and it was very difficult to think for yourself or to invite outside experts. But the good news is that sometimes these conditions are present, not just in a small gathering in a church, but in a nation of 300 million people. Sometimes we can see examples of a moral society. Consider the events of just the last week. According to news reports, in the week after a Category 4 storm devastated the island of Puerto Rico, the extra steps that the president authorized have been in response to the wisdom of the American people. In one case, one person, a financial administrator from Colorado, knew about the United States Navy ship, the Comfort. He had read about the ship's humanitarian work in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and later in Haiti after the earthquake. The 1,000-bed naval ship has a trauma unit and specialized X-ray machines. He sat in Colorado at work and at home watching the news, waiting to hear that the ship was now headed for Puerto Rico. He said, "I assumed that the order would be given at any moment and that it would be on its way to help our fellow citizens. But that news did not come. So a week ago Saturday, this man in Boulder decided to start a petition on change.org. The petition asks the Department of Defense to send the ship to the island, where hospitals were overwhelmed and are overwhelmed and barely functioning. He also created a Facebook page for the cause, and he launched a Twitter hashtag. Hundreds of thousands of people signed the petition. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton joined in the call. And on Wednesday, the Department of Defense said the Comfort would depart Friday for Puerto Rico. No one explained why it took so long to activate. The ship had been sitting at the naval base in Norfolk, Virginia. Simultaneously, a law student of Puerto Rican heritage who lives in Tampa Bay, in the Tampa Bay area, created a petition on change.org. It asks the Department of Homeland Security to waive the Jones Act for 12 months. She did this last weekend, and by Tuesday it had nearly 500,000 signatures. The power of groups. The Jones Act is a 1920 regulation that requires goods shipped from one American port to another be transported on a ship that is American-built, American-owned, and crewed by United States citizens or permanent residents. The goal of the Jones Act in 1920 was to protect the small American shipping industry, but it drives up the costs in Puerto Rico by making everything that arrives by ship much more expensive. By Tuesday, the petition had 500,000 signatures, and Wednesday, the administration announced that it would suspend the law for 10 days. Now, that's hardly long enough, but it is a start. The next battle mounting is for the White House to ask Congress to draft a relief package to help Puerto Rico in the long term. President Trump did that about a week after Harvey hit Texas, but it's been more than a week since the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, and he has yet to do the same. Puerto Rico will need billions of dollars to rebuild hospitals and homes and repair its electrical system. The island does not have the money, and it is up to Congress to pass the bill. They passed an $8 billion relief package for Texas after Harvey, and now FEMA's disaster relief fund is dwindling. The White House has not said when it will send a relief package request for Puerto Rico to Congress. It will take more pressure from the community of the American people, raising the issue, pushing on government to make this happen. As you see, under the right circumstances, groups are remarkably intelligent. Groups are wise when they are made up of people with different backgrounds, different specialties. Groups are wise when members of the group are thinking for themselves, when they trust their own ideas, trust their own experiences. Neither of these conditions, diversity or independence, were present that January night in 2010 when I wanted to rent space at my Bethesda church to put up a phone tower. But this week, we have seen the power of the wisdom of crowds. When we have a country made up of people who are diverse and who are encouraged to think independently. Unitarian Universalists are blessed by the fact that we are some of the most independent people on earth. We think for ourselves. We stand on our own two feet. We evaluate every claim using our own experience and our own reason. Here we attempt to have respectful discussions on all topics. Our democracy shows our trust in the potential wisdom of the group. I believe that the management of institutions, including business, government, education, and religious institutions, benefit from collective wisdom. Often we can get good advice from a diverse group of independent people. At the same time, without such independent thinking, without such diversity, a group can become an angry mob. I've seen it happen. When it comes to this church, individualism is an important value. However, the choice is not between being an individual or being part of a community. We are at our best when we are diverse, independent individuals who live within a community. So let us work to show respect for the theists and the atheists and the agnostics who are here today. Let us work to show respect for the Christians and the humanists who are with us today. Let us work to show respect for people of different ethnic and racial backgrounds among us in this community and beyond. Let us show respect for people of different economic backgrounds. And most important in this time in our country, let us be careful to show respect for both Democrats and Republicans and independents. A healthy religious community encourages respect for diversity in background and independent thinking. It's not easy. However, if we do not engage in dialogue, then we are part of the divisive pathology of our time.